Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hello there. Welcome back. My name is Patrick Madrid. You probably guessed that by now. My number is 888-914-9149. We have room for you right now, 888-914-9149. Don't forget that October is the month of the Rosary, and we're inviting you to celebrate that with us here every evening at 7 p.m. Central. Father Rocky and Margaret, the Family Rosary Across America. We'd like to invite you to pray with us and pray for your family as well. There'll be many, many families all around the country who will be praying together. And let's face it, our families do need prayers, right? As I was saying yesterday, my family needs prayers, your family needs prayers, and the families that pray together stay together, as the late, great Father Patrick Peyton used to say. So there's no better time than now to begin praying together. You can do this on your local Relevant Radio station or through the Relevant Radio app or online at relevantradio.com. And that's relevantradio.com/Family Rosary Across America. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. All right, Cyrus, some big news in the world of children's cartoons came out yesterday. And I hate to break it to people, but were you a Scooby-Doo guy? In your day, back in the day?
Yeah, man, I grew up with Scooby-Doo. Loved it. Shaggy, Velma, Mystery Van.
Yeah.
I loved it all.
So Shaggy was the hippie guy, right? That's kind of happy-go-lucky
well,
hippie.
Well, I didn't think of him as a hippie when I was a little kid, but now that I'm older, oh, yeah, he's definitely a hippie.
Yeah. He's got the little chin beard, and he's got the shaggy hair. I guess that's why they call him Shaggy.
I like the original. There's been a bunch of new versions over the years, and I'm a stickler for the very, very old one.
The original.
The original. OG.
And that, it sounds like the Partridge Family is singing that song.
It does, yeah.
But, so, Scooby-Doo, I don't even know when it came out, but I don't remember as a kid ever watching it. My younger brothers and sisters watched it. But I was maybe a little bit too old, so it never really caught me. So I don't have any fond childhood memories of watching it the way I do for other shows. But in any case, a lot of people were surprised at the news that came out yesterday. I wasn't at all surprised, but as you and I both know, that character Velma, she wears the turtleneck sweater up to her ears.
Yeah, the big glasses.
That's the character. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's now lesbian.
Bravo.
Explicitly lesbian. I'm sorry, did you say something?
Bravo.
I recognize that voice. Yeah, everything's getting gayed up now. So here's from Variety, which is, Variety is copacetic with this kind of thing.
They love it.
Velma is officially a lesbian. Clips from the brand new movie Trick or Treat Scooby-Doo, which show the Mystery Inc. member googly-eyed and speechless when encountering costume designer Coco Diablo. You trying to tell me something? Yeah. He doesn't sound too happy about it. Coco Diablo. And, anybody who has even a smattering of Spanish knows that Diablo is devil, from the Greek, diabolos. We've heard of him before. So this turtleneck sweater girl with the big Coke bottle glasses, she's gaga over Coco Diablo. And people are just in a tizzy over it. And a lot of people are really excited about it. But there they go. They've done it again. This has been happening in the... Now, which universe is it where they're all getting gayed up?
DC.
Is it the...
DC's definitely DC? All over it. Yeah, they all have right. Rock.
Marvel, are they doing that?
I don't know. I'm sure. I'm sure they are. But DC Robin is gay now. And the son of Superman...
I didn't know he had a son.
Yeah. Oh, in the comics. Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. That's interesting. Well, since I'm probably reading the Bible when that stuff's going on, I don't really know that. But I knew that a lot of people would know this character, And I'm sorry to see this continuing. I don't think there's any way to stop it at the moment because they've got their hands on the buttons and foot levers of power when it comes to these characters, and they're just remaking them according to their own ideological dictates. And that's a shame because, like you said, Cyrus, Scooby-Doo back in the day was a very innocent, simple, harmless kind of entertainment. That's how I always thought of it. Kind of like Gilligan's Island. You know, it's just empty calories of entertainment, but there's nothing bad about it. And now, because they're pushing an agenda, the question that parents have to ask themselves is, do I want to let my kids watch this stuff anymore? My advice would be don't, because it's a subtle form of indoctrination. And people say, oh, come on, this is the world the way it really is. Yeah, I understand that. It is the world the way it really is. But what did Jesus say? He said, be in the world, but not of the world. And I don't know who first said it, but you are what you eat. That's for sure. So I'm bringing this to your attention, everybody, just so that you can be aware. And this is why in our household long ago, we began to just eliminate certain things from the television offerings like the Disney Channel. Or I don't know if we ever really had the Disney Channel per se. I never thought about having the Disney Channel, Cyrus, until Peter Jackson's Get Back came out, all glorious 6 hours of it. So I subscribed to the Disney Channel and watched that and then unsubscribed.
And you heroically watched that in one sitting.
You might
be the only person.
It was funny because I told my wife, okay, I'm going out there to watch this. She was in the kitchen doing something. And she came out about 2 hours later and she says, is it done? I said, oh, no, there's 4 hours to go. It's not even halfway done. So I think I might have refilled my wine glass once. But other than that, I just stayed there. I was parked for 6 hours. It was so good.
And then you canceled your Disney Plus membership immediately after that?
Yeah. Well, more or less immediately. I have to go back and double check it because I had no other use for it. There's nothing on that Disney Channel that I would ever watch anyway. But I guess back to the point I was making before the Peter Jackson movie was that in the Madrid household, we began to just distance ourselves from some of the things that Nancy and I grew up with. That was good family fare. The Disney, what is it? Walt Disney, The Wonderful World of Disney, I think it was called. I forget what it was, but I think it came on Sunday nights or something like that. And Walt Disney would open it and it would be all kinds of interesting things. And that's long gone. So all of this indoctrination that's taking place on a steady basis, this is just one other example of it. And if you're into all that, okay, great. But if you're not into that, I suggest you probably start pulling the plug on these platforms because they're doing it intentionally. This is not being done just because they like the lifestyle. They're doing it because they want your kids to start liking the lifestyle and being at the very least okay with it. So that's my word of advice.
Well, did you see the I almost don't even want to say the name of the movie, the new comedy movie that came out, and it's like a rom-com, but it's about...
I saw it kind of made the news for a day or two, and then it sort of faded away.
Yeah, it had a...
Yeah, it's about... A gay male rom-com, romantic comedy. I had to stop and think, what is rom-com mean? So it's a romantic comedy... And it's all gay. It's all dudes.
Right. And apparently there's explicit sex scenes and all the jokes are, you know, they're gay.
Inside catty remarks.
Right. And anyway, this had an insane marketing strategy. Like they dropped so much money on marketing, but nobody went to show up for it. And
And they're blaming all the straight people.
that's right. That's
they're blaming me and you.
Yep.
I'm straight, by the way, FYI.
Yeah, it was a big surprise.
I am opposite sex attracted,
yeah.
and always have been, always will be. But no, they're blaming us because apparently it's the fact that the movie bombed at the box office is the fault of people who are quote unquote homophobic.
Right.
I mean, there's no thought given to the fact that maybe it's just, you know, a dud of a movie. I mean, for other reasons beyond the obvious ones.
And that real population is much, much smaller. We're talking about 1-2% of the population, right?
Well, I don't trust like that 70, figure.
I know.
Anymore, I don't trust that figure.
But they want us to think it's everybody. This is the new normal.
I suspect it's a larger percentage of the whole. I mean, for a long time, I know it was the terribly flawed and intentionally deceptive Kinsey report that came out in the late 1950s that was considered the standard when it came to scientific, projections or, you know, what they said were the percentage of people in the population who did this or who did that. And I think 10% was what Kinsey said. And that seemed outrageously high for the longest time. But I don't know. I mean, anymore now, it seems like there is definitely a societal trend in that direction, largely as a result of the indoctrination process that's gone on and how they will shout down and try to bully and intimidate and silence anybody who opposes what they are doing or disagrees with it, for that matter. So I don't know, Cyrus. I feel like I just shouted you down. I didn't mean to do that.
No, and you're right, because I don't have any numbers in front of me. This is, you know, just my gut feeling with all of the people I know. I know a couple of gay people, mm-hmm. and they're really nice, and we're friends. But so this isn't like some gay bashing. It just feels like we're being bombarded with this,
yeah.
and children's shows. I saw it in Blue's Clues, the new Blue's Clues. These are little kids. Why is anything sexualized in a little kid's show? Why is Scooby-Doo?
Oh, well, let me tell you why. Yeah. Let me tell you why. You have so much to learn, young Padawan. Let me tell you why. The reason why, and I know you know this, because they want to sexualize the children as early as possible. Planned Parenthood, they want future clients. All of the associated businesses that can profit on this, including clothing manufacturers and others, entertainment platforms and things, the more they can get the kids not only thinking about this, but also experimenting, the better it is, because it's good for business. And it's a steady supply of future customers for those kinds of things, quite frankly. And it's also, I mean, even beyond the commercial aspect of it, if you ask me, I think there is a deep commitment to this terrible ideology. They want to transform everything. They want to transform everything and everybody. Because think about it for a second. Don't think about it too much. Don't think about it too closely. But there is a colonization dimension to all of this, to colonize and control, and to, through using tactics of subversion, and I don't mean just subversion of people in their souls, but also to subvert the established social order. That way you can gain control and do, in essence, whatever you want. If you get enough people who are cowed into submission because they're afraid that they will get deplatformed. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter yesterday that I, you know, within the space of like 5 minutes, I saw the number of people who are in the follower category drop by over 800 people. It might've been over 1,000 people just all at once. It just disappeared. So as I was scanning, I saw that, well, other people are having the same thing. So my point or my comment on Twitter was, if this is a purge of the bots, all the fake accounts, that's fine. You know, they're worthless. Get rid of them. But if it's ideological punishment, and often it is when it comes to Twitter, they'll punish you if you hold views or espouse views online that are contrary to the established narrative. If you do that, they'll punish you.
We've seen it. We've seen it 100 times. Facebook's the same. Maybe
yeah, it's true. Yes, that's true. Where are those ladies when we need them?
No, you know what else?
They're
we need?
On vacation.
Where did What's I put? That? Where did I put all of this duct tape that I used to have? Because I haven't used it, and my brain is about to explode.
Oh well, just give it time because I've got more. There's plenty more today. Do you want me to? Do you want to have to test the duct tape now, or do you want to wait a little bit later? Because I've got another story that'll make your head explode.
I'm going to just get free. Yeah. I'm going to do some pre-duct tape.
I might need some of that over here.
There you go, buddy.
Toss me that roll when you're done with
it. Got
it. Or just cut me a couple strips.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll... Okay. Maybe one more. Because I know what's coming. I know another story that's going to require a bit of duct tape reinforcement so the head doesn't explode. All right. It's been a while since somebody has approached me at a speaking event and handed me a roll of duct tapes, you know, without saying a word and a big smile on their face, handing me a roll of duct tape. That's happened many times. And it's a gift for you. I'm like the errand boy bringing duct tape to you, Cyrus.
Yeah,
we've gone through all the duct tape that people have gifted to this program.
A lot of duct tape.
Better right. Jump on the Amazon app and order some more.
What's the story? Now I'm ready.
Well, are you? You want it now? Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay. Here it goes. This is from Live Action, the great people over there. Shout out to all of our friends at Live Action. Since the reversal of Roe versus Wade, several states have passed pro-life protections, while others have doubled down on their pro-abortion measures. And now it appears, based on research from a noted pro-abortion organization, that's the Guttmacher Institute, which used to be a wholly owned subsidiary of Planned Parenthood. Now it got spun off and it's on its own, but it's still in their camp. So based on Guttmacher's own data that was released, they find that two states, and in the two states in question, you could probably guess who they are, California and New York, these two states by themselves account for about a third of all the abortions in the United States. And that's as of 2020. And you know how things have changed since 2020 with the overturning of Roe versus Wade, how I love saying those words. It's just a wonderful thing to be able to have lived to see. Yes. Roe versus Wade was overturned. Just love. I love saying the words. It makes me happy. In 2020, these two states, California and New York, collectively committed well over 264,000 abortions, about 30% of all abortions reported in the U.S. California committed the highest number reported among all states in the District of Columbia in the nation, with New York coming in a close second place, according to data published by Planned Parenthood's former research arm and special affiliate, the Guttmacher Institute. Doesn't Guttmacher mean something like death in German? No, it means good maker in German, I think. In addition, 2020 abortion totals from just five states made up nearly half of all the abortions in the nation. And there are a lot of statistics here, so I don't want your eyes to glaze over, but I just want to share with you, this is just really, it's brutal and it's also reprehensible. And I would say, from a heavenly standpoint, this is extremely dangerous for not our democracy. Well, that too, probably. But this is extremely dangerous for the inhabitants of these states. How long will God allow these crimes to go unpunished? I mean, if you're taking a biblical perspective on this, how long will it take? I mean, not that I want to see it happen, and I don't wish it to happen. I really don't. I prefer mercy over justice. But with all of these abortions that are taking place in California and New York, and also at a great clip with other states, it makes one wonder, doesn't it? In 2020, the data also shows that California committed the highest number of abortions among each of the 50 individual states and D.C. In addition, California abortions, that was 154,000 of them in that 1 year, by the way, exceeded the combined number of abortions committed by 29 states and D.C., including Oklahoma, District of Columbia, Oregon, Kansas, Indiana, Louisiana, Wisconsin, New Mexico, Alabama, South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, Mississippi, Iowa, Arkansas, Hawaii, Utah, Rhode Island, Maine, New Hampshire, Nebraska, Delaware, Idaho, Montana, Alaska, Vermont, North Dakota, West Virginia, South Dakota, and Wyoming. All of the abortions that took place in those 29 states, over half of the states in the country, are still less than the number of abortions that were performed in California. Now, there is a reason for that. And, of course, part of the reason is the population between these states, the population differential between these states. So we know, for example, that California has just shy of 40 million people. So the official number is 39.2 million. I suspect with people who are unregistered and undocumented, the figure is probably significantly higher than that by at least a couple of a million, if I had to guess. But let's just round it at 40 million people. The official total is 39.2 million. New York, 19.4 million. So if you do the calculations, and I did, as I was looking at this morning, Cyrus, and I had to reach for the duct tape, I was doing the calculations. So California, in terms of its population, represents about 12% of the total U.S. population. And New York is only 6% of the total population with its 19.4 million. And that's out of an estimated total of about 330 million people. So what that means is, if you want to look at it from a statistical standpoint, is that just 18% of the population is responsible for about a third, not quite a third, of all the abortions nationally in this country. And that number is just going to increase as more and more states, thankfully, now that we're out from under the yoke of Roe versus Wade. Cyrus, did I mention that Roe versus Wade was overturned recently? Did I ever mention that to you? I could just listen to those words all day long. So as more and more states begin to do the right thing and restrict or even completely outlaw abortion, we're going to see more and more. These numbers are going to go higher, God forbid, but they're going to go higher in places like California and New York. Woe to you, lawmakers of California and New York. Woe to you, because God is not going to permit this indefinitely. I don't know what else to say, but how about this? Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We have phone calls. We have emails. We have all kinds of good stuff for you. So please stand by. Don't panic. I'm coming right back, right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, let's go to the phones, 888-914-9149. We'll start off with Norma in California. Hi, Norma.
Good morning. I just wanted to say a quick comment that the other day, I work at a crisis pregnancy center, and the other day, one of our clients tried to leave a review on Google, and it was blocked. So she says, hey, you know, I'm trying to leave a review. It's blocked. So I had our computer people look into it. They contacted Google directly, and Google told them that it's a campaign. It's a rolling campaign that's starting, but it's going to end up being worldwide, that they're going to be blocking all good reviews for crisis pregnancy centers.
They actually admitted that? I have a hard time believing that, mm-hmm. that Google would say that.
I don't doubt what you're saying, but
I can't imagine that Google would admit to something so blatantly egregious. Do you have any evidence that they said that?
Well, I mean, our IT guy said that, you know, they contacted them directly. They had them on hold for a very long time. And he said that, yeah, they said it's a rolling campaign. It's just starting, but it's going to end up being worldwide. That's what they told us.
And that extends solely to abortion clinics, or are there other things they're going to block or other kinds of businesses?
No, to crisis, not abortion clinics, but crisis pregnancy centers.
I see. Well, I mean, what can I say? Google certainly fits the profile of a social media giant that is run by socially irresponsible people, because they control the agenda and they control what you're allowed to see and not see. Now, I'm assuming in good faith that this is actually happening. I have no reason to doubt you, Norma. But here's my recommendation. Could you get that in writing? Can you send Google an email? In other words, perform the same function that your computer people did, but do it by email and ask them to respond and see what they say. And if they put it in email and it's really from Google, then please let me know, because I'd love to let the public know about that.
Got it.
Okay. I mean, as bad as things are, I would not have guessed that they would be that explicit or that open about doing something that a lot of people would find obviously very objectionable. So, yeah, if you can help me out, if anything does come of it that way, I'd like to know that. But I'd like it to be in writing so that there's something there that I can go on. Thanks, Norma. What a shame. Let's go to Steve down in Rhode Island. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Patrick. My question is, what does the Catholic think about when it says in the Bible about election? Did God predetermine people to be saved before creation?
Yes. It's called predestination. And St. Paul talks a lot about it in Ephesians chapter 1 and also in Romans chapter 8. So those two chapters in particular are sort of the source for this. But that's part of the Catholic Church's teaching, that takes somebody like the Blessed Virgin Mary, predestined for heaven. Doesn't mean that their free will is eliminated. That's impossible. So people still have the free will. But there are those, and the word elect means chosen, or you make a decision for. So we, you know, in political terms, we talk about elections where you vote for your candidate. So it has that connotation that the Lord chooses and predestined. So this is what it says in Romans chapter 8. We can look in verse 29. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And the whole chapter deals with this issue of predestination, as does Ephesians chapter 1. Now, one thing to note is that although the church does indeed teach this biblical doctrine, as it teaches all authentic biblical doctrines, it does not accept an error that some people have embraced, and that is double predestination, that God has created a certain class of people solely for damnation, and there really is nothing that they can do about it. So in John 3:16, where Jesus says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him should not perish but have eternal life," those who hold to the double predestination view, in essence, would say, well, he didn't really love everybody in the world. He just loved those who are the elect. And that's not true. So it is a mysterious reality, but it's true nonetheless.
So would those people who weren't predestined, would their hearts be hardened more for their salvation?
Well, I mean, that's one way to discuss it. I don't know exactly all of the parameters that go into that. But let's look at Pharaoh as an example. Okay, yeah. So we're, you know, great minds, right? So Pharaoh, I'm not going to say that he was one of the reprobates, but I have a feeling he probably was. But in the Exodus account, when Moses is warning the Pharaoh about this impending disaster, and God sends these successive plagues, 10 of them, to try to wear him down so that he will let the people go. And we're told more than once that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. And I have a feeling that's probably what you're thinking about. Well, consulting, you know, commentators like St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, and others, my understanding of what they have to say about that is that this was the natural result, or the supernatural result, I guess, of God withdrawing from Pharaoh. So as God withdraws, so if it's a cold, cold room that you're in, and the source of the heat that's keeping you warm begins to be moved further and further away from you, you become colder and colder. Or if the source of light begins to move away from you, it becomes darker and darker. So my understanding is that in the case of Pharaoh, it wasn't that God pressed a button to make Pharaoh more sinful, but rather as God pulled back from him, that was the inevitable consequence. You know, the inevitable state of his soul got harder and harder. So let me recommend a book to you, because this is a very deep topic that is not easily discussed in sound bites. It's a book called Predestination. In fact, I think it may the full title may be The Biblical Doctrine of Predestination, by a Dominican theologian named Reginald. This is a tongue twister. Reginald Garrigou Lagrange. Okay, so Reginald, that's easy. Garrigou, G-A-R-R-I-G-O-U, hyphen Lagrange, L-A-G-R-A-N-G-E. He's since gone on to his eternal reward. And he wrote this tome that takes up the biblical teaching of predestination and explains how it is that the Catholic Church teaches this and what it means and what and also what it doesn't mean. So if you're looking for something that can take you deep, I would recommend that book.
Okay. One quick thing I just want to let you know. I'm the Steve who wrote you an email a couple of weeks ago about getting back to the Catholic Church. I was divorced, and I talked to you on the phone the same day.
Okay.
Spoke it.
Oh, I remember that. I read your email, and then you called me, or you called, and then I didn't realize it was you. Okay, yeah, I remember.
And I just want to let you know that I did start the process to see if I be granted an annulment for my first marriage.
Oh, I'm happy for you. I mean, it's never a happy thing to see a marriage end, and obviously the first and, you know, the primary goal would be to restore and save the marriage, not to see it end. But sometimes those things are just impossible.
That's over 30 years ago, so.
Yeah.
But I just want to let you know, due to your recommendation, I am seeking the annulment.
I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that. Well, let's pray for God's will to be done. And I'm glad you called. An interesting question. And I do think if you read that book, you'll find a lot there to think about. Let's go now to Robert in California. Hello, Robert.
Good morning, Patrick. Can you expound about the non-surgium topic? I've heard it twice already.
Okay.
Is it a magisterial teaching or just a concession of belief amongst theologians? I attended a theology class and I mentioned it and spoken and the speaker, but he was so adamant or convinced that it was a very, very wrong notion because God kept the incarnation a secret from everyone, including the angels.
Well, he would have no way of knowing that. So let's talk about it. So for people who are not familiar with that Latin phrase, non serviam means I will not serve. And that's the phrase that's used by theologians and others. I mean, not just theologians, but I mean, it's kind of part of the church's way of looking at the fall of the good angels, the fall of the angels, rather. And the view is that in some way, those angels who had just been created, all of them, God is not still creating angels. He made all the angels that ever existed all at once. And he gave them a test. And the test was that they should choose for or against. And although the specifics of what the test was are not given to us in divine revelation, I think we can reasonable certainty, I think we can deduce what the test must have been. And as I understand it, there are two primary possibilities. One is what you're alluding to, Robert, which is that God showed the angels the plan of salvation that entailed the fall of Adam and Eve. It also perhaps even entailed their own fall, and that he would become a human being. And keep in mind that human beings are lower in the order of creation than angels. In a way, similar to, it's not the same thing, but similar to how animals are lower than us. And that, as this theory goes, that God showed the angels that they would have to adore the Jesus in the incarnation as God and man. And that they said, those who said this said, non serviam, I will not serve, I will not do that because of their pride. It would be something similar to as if God had revealed to us that he would become incarnate as an animal, as a cow, let's say, or as a raccoon. Now, we know the animals are lower than us. So there's some, you know, there's some reason to think that if that was the test, that could easily account for why some of them in their pride would say no. But the other view, and this is the view that I think is more likely to be the case, is that God showed the angels, first of all, when he created the angels, he created them as such powerful and magnificent and beautiful creatures, and they were dazzled by their own beauty and their own powers and their own knowledge. And it seems more likely to me that the test was, you have to look to me, God, as your creator, for the source of your being and the cause of all the goodness that I created you with. And some of them, it seems, because of their pride, were so dazzled by their own beauty and their own powers that in their pride they said, no, I will not serve you, God. I'm so I'm so powerful that they preferred to look to themselves as the source of their beauty and power and not God. And in that instant, the ones who did that fell and became demons. And when the Bible talks about a war in heaven and the bad angels being cast down, that's what it's referring to. And those who passed the test instantaneously became the good angels. Now, they were all good originally, but they were not yet in the beatific vision. They didn't see God face to face. So they saw God and they knew God in an attenuated way, kind of like how Adam and Eve saw God after a fashion in the garden. They didn't see the beatific vision. Even though they were created in grace and original innocence, they had not yet attained to the beatific vision, nor had the angels before the test. But once the test took place, those that fell were immediately cast down and disfigured, and those who passed the tests were glorified and entered into the beatific vision. So the non serviam is certainly true. There's no doubt about it, because if they hadn't done anything wrong, there'd be no fall. There would be no demons. There would be no devils. They would all just be good angels. So anybody who asserts otherwise isn't really properly schooled in Catholic teaching, not to mention biblical theology. So that much I can say. Now, did he have any other specific objection, or was he just objecting to the whole notion of the angels falling?
No, I think it's more like it's not towards the non-servium, you know, aspect. It's more towards, like, when I said the reason why they probably, you know, Satan and his angels or the other angels had said that, or, you know, because they knew that God will send his only son and he will, and Mary, as another human creature, will bore that him, his son. So at that point, that thought of him, he's Satan, and said, no, I'm not serving any human being. And he said adamantly that, no, that's a very, very wrong notion, because God kept the incarnation secret from everybody. No.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, he didn't. And I know that I'm not arguing with you, but that's just, it's just a fatuous thing to say, because look, the angel Gabriel told the Blessed Virgin Mary. He didn't keep it a secret. He told her exactly what was going to happen. And look what happened. Mary got up and didn't keep it a secret, and she told Elizabeth. And Elizabeth recognized it. So there's a whole chain. And then we see the angels appearing to, and I talked about this yesterday, as a matter of fact, the angels appeared to the shepherds in the field outside of Bethlehem and told them. And so then they go and adore baby Jesus in the manger. So this notion that this was secret, you know, in an absolute sense, is just not true. Now, he was probably thinking in terms of what's known as the messianic secret. And you see this in the Gospels, Robert. I'll have to leave it at this. I have to take a break. The messianic secret, if I can boil it down, is the reality that throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus healing somebody and then saying, be quiet about this. Don't tell anybody about this. And other people, too. He would also silence the demons who would ask him from time to time, who are you? Are you the Holy One of God? So there was, they didn't know exactly, at least some of them didn't know. And so that is true. That actually did happen in our Lord's public ministry, but it was because those people were not the ones chosen to tell the world about Jesus. He had his followers that he was appointing to do that. And it wasn't for the blind man or the lame man or the leper to undertake that duty. That was reserved for somebody else. Now, eventually it would fall to everybody who wants to do that. But I think, if I had to guess, because he's thinking about the messianic secret, he's taking it too far and asserting something that ultimately just isn't true. I hope that helps, Robert. I've got to take a break, but thank you. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can call me right now. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right, let's go. 888-914-9149. This is an email that comes in from, and I'm going to leave her anonymous. She gave me her name, but she didn't ask me to keep her anonymous, but she's listening in Albuquerque. And if she's listening right now, you'll recognize yourself in this email. She says, "Hello, Patrick. I'm 31 years old, mother of five, and I'm expecting my sixth child, and I am Catholic. My husband is also Catholic, but non-practicing. My husband has an alcohol problem, and we have many more problems in our marriage. I have been practicing NFP for about 3 years until I became pregnant. Now my husband says he wants no more children and that NFP doesn't work, and he wants me to get my tubes tied, but I told him I would not do that. Would it be a sin if he gets a vasectomy? I really don't think we should have more children, being in the circumstances that we are in. I would like to continue to practice NFP, but he says that he wants no more children." Yeah, I can understand how this would be really a difficult situation. First of all, number one, God bless you. And he certainly has blessed you, but God bless you for being open to life, mother of six children. I think that because this email came in some months ago, that your child that you were expecting when you wrote me the email is probably in your arms right now. So God bless you. You've done well, and you've been generous with God and open to life, and that's a beautiful thing. I'm sorry to hear that your husband has taken a turn for the worse in terms of his attitudes toward this, but you're right to say no to him. I'm not going to get my tubes tied. That would be a serious sin. That would be a form of self-mutilation, and the church says that married life and the conjugal aspect of married life is ordered toward the possibility of procreation. And so if either the husband or the wife or both do something, and this would be one of those things, getting your tubes tied, and yes, a vasectomy would fall into the same category, it essentially forecloses upon the possibility of the transmission of human life. So what happens then is that the marital act becomes purely for pleasure. It is no longer open to the possibility that God might bless you with a child, even though it may take place at a time that to you and your husband might seem to be a very difficult and an inopportune time to have a child. And I'll be frank with you, there were times over the last, well, my wife and I have been married just coming up on 42 years now, but during the stretch of time that we were having children, and there's about a 20-year age gap between our oldest son and our youngest son, total of 11 kids. And yeah, there were times when, although it was never like in exactly the same situation that you're describing, but there were moments when we both looked at each other when she took the pregnancy test and found out that another baby was on the way after we already had a bunch of kids, and we looked at each other and thought, how are we going to afford this? But you know what? It always worked out. And we were poor. I don't think we were dirt poor. I mean, we didn't live in destitution or anything like that, but for easily the first 12 years of our marriage, we never had enough money to make ends meet. Somehow it always worked, you know, and part of the process was that we had to decide which bill to pay late each month. Well, we can't pay this one late because we paid that one late last month. So it was always a squeeze, and we went through years and years and years where really there was no extra money to do anything. So, I mean, we never like went on a vacation or anything like that. That was impossible. When we were able to buy our first house, it was 1,165 square feet, a little ranch house. And when we moved into the house, we had three children, two toddlers and a newborn. When we moved out of the house 9 years later, we had seven children. We were, as I like to say, stacked like firewood in an 1,165 two-bedroom house, square foot house. But it worked. And I look back on it, Nancy and I both look back on it with a kind of wistfulness. It was among the happiest times of our lives. We didn't have anything. It was a big deal when we could buy a boombox to play music, because before that we had a cassette tape player and that was worn out. So when we finally had the wherewithal to splurge, you know, $50 or whatever it was, that we got a boombox, we could play CDs, that was like a really big deal for us. But I look back on it, it was simple, it was homey, we were all together. We didn't have money to go do anything else. There was no internet. And so we just had a wonderful, happy family time without all the frills. And I'm thinking about even things like food. It was very common in our household that dinner would be a bowl of beans that my wife had boiled all day, and the house would smell delicious. If you've never had that smell of boiled beans, pinto beans, I mean, try it sometime. So we could eat, all nine of us, by the time we got to seven kids, we could have a robust meal of belly-filling, delicious boiled beans with some chopped onion and a little bit of cheese on top, maybe, and some tortillas. I mean, we could feed the whole family of nine for a couple of bucks, literally a couple of bucks. And they were among the happiest times of our lives. So I don't mean to turn this into something about me, but I'd like to offer you from my own experience the encouragement that if you say yes to God, he will not say no to you. If God does bless you with more children, and there's no guarantee that he seeks to do that. It's not a given that you will necessarily have more children. But given your age, you're 31 years of age, so the likelihood of you having more children, I think, is pretty high, chances are. But that leads me to NFP. NFP is not absolutely foolproof. It is not, as some misguided people say, a form of contraception. It absolutely is not. It is cooperating with God's natural design of your body and the female menstrual cycle. And I know you know this. You don't need me to explain it to you. But just for those who are listening, natural family planning is kind of like fasting from food. It's the opposite of gluttony and eating food for the sake of pleasure only. It is the opposite of that. When you fast from food, it means that you're not making use of a good thing in a bad way or in a way that might harm your health. And in the same way, when a couple employs natural family planning, NFP for short, it's a way from fasting from the good thing that God has ordained for them in marriage and to not make use of that good thing for a while because of finances or health or war or some other pressing issue, the couple in their prudential judgment determines that right now would not be a good time for us to have a child. And God made marriage so that the man and the woman can make such decisions. Don't be offended. I don't mean you, the lady who wrote me this email. I'm just speaking to whoever the hothead is out there who says, well, NFP is just a form of contraception. No, it's not. Settle yourself down. The married couple has a role to play in God's order for marriage, and that is to make these decisions as best they can. And sometimes you look back and say, well, that was the wrong decision. But we made it in good faith based upon what we thought the circumstances were. And look, oops, God blesses with another baby, which means that God has a plan that is bigger than our plan, and God knows more than we know, and God knows what's best for us. And God has chosen to bless us with yet another human life. As big of a deal as that is, and I understand it because I've been there, don't be afraid of it, is what I'm trying to say. And as the Bible also says, God will not be outdone in his generosity. And I know it's easier to say it than do it, but I've done it, and countless other people have done it. So my point is, it can be done. It seems daunting, perhaps, but if you, even just you yourself, and I realize your husband, at the moment at least, does not look at things the same way, if you remain faithful and open to life, make use of natural family planning, if your husband is willing to do that, there are ways that you can maybe help him to understand why that's a better way to go, a non-sinful way to go, then that would be ideal. Now, the last thing I'll say is if he insists on getting a vasectomy, he's going to be committing a serious sin because it is the grave sin of self-mutilation and turning the marriage act into something that's purely for pleasure because there's no more responsibility involved because there's no possibility of having a child. So now, as it were, you're having your cake and eating it too. And I'm talking more to him than to you. You have your cake and you eat it too. And that's not what God's plan is for marriage. Love and responsibility is the term that Pope John Paul II used to describe this. Love and responsibility, they go together. And when you divorce the two, you wind up with either pure hedonism or, not that this is really ever done, but if you go in the other direction and there's no love involved, then it's just simply breeding like animals do. And we're not animals, we're human beings. Yes, I know we're animals in a certain sense, but we're not animals, if you know what I mean. So if your husband persists in going down that path, that's a very serious thing for him. And I hope that you can reason with him, and I hope that his eyes will be opened. But if he were to do that, just know that if you have raised your objection and told him, no, this is not right, you shouldn't do this, his sin will not be your sin. And that leads to one final thing, now that I'm thinking about it, and that is, well, then what about if he has had a vasectomy and the marriage act becomes, you know, something that the two of you want to engage in? Well, you're not thereby committing a sin, even though you know that what he has done would prevent this from being open to the transmission of life. But you would have the right to say, you know, you have made it such that this is not a normal marriage act anymore. And because of this way in which you have, in reality, kind of attacked our marriage and attacked the foundation of our marriage, I don't think we're going to do that. Because you're now, in a way, it's like spending money that was stolen, and you turn yourself in and you say, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And for whatever strange reason, you don't have to make restitution and give the money back. And if you're spending that money on something that, you know, if it's money that you stole, even if you said, gee, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do it, but you're continuing to spend the money, that's an injustice in itself. I see it in kind of that category. So although I don't believe the church would say to you that you must do this, I think you would be within your rights to do that if you chose to do that. And maybe that might make him rethink things. And maybe it would lead to him getting a reversal of that vasectomy if he, God forbid, goes through with it. Thank you for having confidence in Relevant Radio, and thank you for writing to me. I'm coming back with hour two right after this, so please stay right there. Back to your phone calls in just a moment.